This is the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray, episode 23.
Welcome to the Soulful PR Podcast. Tune in every week for practical tips, strategies, and case studies that will help you get media coverage for your business. And now, here's your host, Janet Murray.
Hello, and welcome to the show. Well, the guest on today's show is really quite a fitting one because I'm actually recording this podcast intro instead of doing something that she is an absolute expert in, and that's dealing with money. So Denise Duffield-Thomas, my guest today, is a money mindset mentor. She has made a fortune really out of creating online courses and programs, helping women to get better at dealing with money. And she's also an absolute whiz at getting media coverage for her business as well, which is one of the reasons why her business has been so profitable. And we do have a chat in the episode about the fact that I'm often heard saying that I don't particularly like money or dealing with money and how that could be holding me back in my life and business. So if any of that resonates with you, then I think you're going to find this an interesting episode because not only do we talk about getting media coverage, which we often talk about on the Soulful PR podcast, but there's also some money talk there as well. But before I get on to the main part of the show, I just wanted to say thank you for the iTunes reviews that you've been leaving me. It's taken me a while to get around to this, but I just wanted to share some of them with you. So I've got one here from Caroline Johnson who says, Janet gives such great down-to-earth practical advice that can help any business owner. I find it so helpful to hear insights directly from a journalist, which both reinforce what I'm already doing and give me new ideas. So thanks, Janet. That's great. Another one here from Bernie. I just listened to the Fear Free Pitching podcast. That's episode three, I should say. Thanks for talking about something that stops me all the time and isn't usually part of a how-to series. So practical steps to try out, and thanks for the follow-up at the end. So that's really nice for me. Notice that the Freudian slip there when I said free instead of three. It's because we're talking about money and money makes me nervous. But it was really nice to hear that Bernie liked episode three, which is all about fear-free pitching. And I'm very, very interested in the emotions around pitching and getting media coverage and how that can hold us back. And certainly we'll be creating more content about that in the coming year. So thanks for that, Bernie. And one last one is from Space Becky. I run a small business and generally hate doing PR. I'm enjoying listening to this podcast as it's helping me prioritize what I really need to do. So that's really great to hear. So thank you so much for those reviews and do keep them coming. I really, really appreciate the feedback. And of course, you can always drop me a line at janet@janetmurray.co.uk or @jan_murray on Twitter, Janet Murray UK on Facebook, or Jan Murray UK on Instagram. I love hearing from you. So please keep in touch. So with that, I think it's on to the main part of the show. So hi, Denise, and welcome to the show. It's so great to have you here.
Thanks, Janet. I really appreciate you taking the time.
So I wanted to start by asking you about your business story. I'm always banging on, I shouldn't put it that really, but I'm always saying to people how important it is if you want to get great publicity that you have a great business story. And I know from reading about you and hearing you interviewed on other podcasts, you have a fantastic business story about how your business came about. So I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about that.
So I think the funny thing about your business story is, you know, you have to pick and choose the bits that are newsworthy, I suppose. Because like a lot of people, my entrepreneurial journey has a lot of twists and turns, and not all of them are that interesting. You know, I moved to London in my early 20s, and for the first kind of 4 or 5 years in London, I just kept on going, jumping from job to job because I was, you know, really looking for something, seeking for something different. But it was kind of super boring, to be honest. You know, I'd spend kind of 6 months in a big corporation, go, no, I want to run my own business, and then I would quit, not knowing what I was going to do, and sit at home for a couple of days stressing about money. And then I would go get a commission-only sales job working in Tesco or something like that. So that was kind of the boring bit of my story. But I guess the interesting part of my story is that I made a big decision that I wanted to go traveling, and I made a huge decision that I wanted to write a book. And I was kind of putting it out to the universe, going, universe, send me an experience that I can write about. Send me an experience that's going to kickstart my business career. And my friend sent me a text message saying, you've got to apply for this job. It was a 6 months all expenses paid blogging assignment. And this was kind of 2010. So blogging and that kind of job was very much a novelty. You know, it felt really interesting and different. And as soon as I found out about it, I said to my husband, Mark, we're going to win this competition and I am going to write a book about it and it's going to kickstart my business and it's going to be amazing. And he was like, okay. And we did. We applied for the competition. We threw everything at it. It wasn't like a, you know, pick someone out of the hat, like a lottery type competition. It was a social media kind of job interview, I suppose. You had to do a lot of things to prove yourself the best couple for this job. So for me, that was the big start of my business because I knew, I was like, this trip is going to be great. And I was, you know, really grateful and excited about that. But I knew that that was going to be such a good business story to be able to speak about and write about and write a book about. And I did. And, you know, I've dined off that story probably for, five, six years now. But again, you have to pick and choose the bits of your story that are interesting to people. And that one definitely is.
And I remember you hearing you interviewed or reading somewhere that you'd had a succession of jobs that you weren't happy with at all. And I remember this image, and this I think is what proves it to be such a great business story. When you said when you were living in London, you had this brown coat that you wore with these really deep pockets, and it was like a symbol for everything that was wrong with your life. Did I remember that rightly?
Yes, and Mark called it my Hagrid coat because he said I looked like Hagrid.
Yeah,
and it was like it was from a secondhand store. It had holes in the pockets. It was not the kind of coat to wear in London winter because it absorbed water, you know. And I'd go to work, and I remember, you know, what it's like living in London. You know, it's like you have to walk to the bus station, then you grab a bus, then you go to the tube station, then you catch two or three trains, and then on the other side you walk, you know, winter, summer, whatever. And I'd get on that train every morning and I would just say, I want something different. I want to work for myself. I want to feel like my life has more meaning. And that's painful. Anyone who's in that position right now of commuting to a job you don't like, I feel for you, and I want to let you know that it's temporary. If you've got a dream in your heart to own your own business and own your own life, it will happen, but you have to keep that dream alive and you have to work towards it, even if the reality is not what you want right now.
And so this Hagrid coat period, this was before the period when you won the competition and things started to change. Did I get that part of it right?
Yes. You know, I was still wearing the Hagrid coat when I found out about the competition because it was kind of, it was winter when we found out about it. And it was a, you know, probably about a 3-4 month process from start to finish. And I remember very clearly coming back from work and it was snowing on the tube station. It was an outdoor train station. And I was walking up and down the platform in my Hagrid coat and rehearsing the speeches I would give to people about how I won the competition and how I had such a big dream for my life. And I was right at the other end of the platform because all the commuters, you know, were just like going, what is she doing? And that's how I got through it. Just, you know, I was like, I'm just rehearsing here for better things and bigger things. And when we were in the top 10 for that competition, when we found out we made that top 10, we started decluttering everything in our lives because we were saying, well, we're going away for 6 months, you know, let's start packing our lives. We started renting out our flat like we advertised for renters, and I got rid of that Hagrid coat right then and there because I knew I would never need it again.
And it was after that you won that competition that you then started to get into coaching, wasn't it, if I remember rightly? And how did that sort of move into the money mindset coaching that you do now, or the programs and the teaching that you do around that now?
Well, I actually started my life coaching course during the 6 months trip because I kind of knew, you know, I was looking beyond it and I knew, you know, it's like, well, I can't go back to my job after this. You know, that's not the whole point of this experience. So I started doing life coaching qualifications, which was not out of the blue because I'd been coaching and mentoring for years and years in between entrepreneurial stuff. So once we finished the competition, we ended up moving back to Australia. And my husband was like, well, why don't you just get, you know, a part-time job just to tide us over? And I said, this is my time. You know, I'm really sorry, but this is my time to go full out on this business. And so I started coaching pretty much from there. And I didn't look back. You know, I was like, this is what I'm meant to be doing. And I really would have felt, it would have been really hard to go back into a normal job or a normal life after that experience. And also because I just knew that it happened for a reason. It wasn't for me to, oh, wow, that was a great trip, now back to life. I knew that it was for me to change my life and to step up in a bigger way.
And since the Hagrid coat days, you've gone on to
create a really successful business. So you've got your two books, you've got your Lucky Bitch Bootcamp course, and which you've, I was reading on your website before, has now helped thousands of women. So how have you used that in your publicity? So those stories and some of those really memorable stories that you've just told then, how have you used that to help move your business on?
Well, in my first year of business, when I got back to Australia, you know, I told that story about winning the competition as kind of a memorable story about setting a big goal. You know, that was it. It was very simple. And actually, the way I got my first life coaching clients is I just did a series of free workshops around town, and I just called them goal setting workshops, you know, like come and learn how to set goals. So my target audience wasn't really entrepreneurs. It was anyone who wanted to set a big goal for their life. You just learn how to kind of put some of those principles of the law of attraction or even just personal development, you know. So a lot of people who came to my first workshops had never set goals before. They'd never done journaling before. So it was a very new audience to that kind of work. And just at the end of the workshop, after telling that story and kind of giving a few principles of what I learned, I just said, hey, if you want to coach with me, here's a form. You can fill it out and you can have a couple of sessions. So I probably exclusively told that story for about a year because that was a big success. And it's interesting now, I still do talk about that because, you know, even though now, you know, I have had a lot more successes in my business, but I still do bring those stories in because I think it's really good for people to know the basics, you know, like what are the basics of setting a goal and having a big vision for your life. To be honest, I haven't really gone down the track yet of going, hey, I've got a $1 million business, let's talk about that. And probably that is the next evolution. And I think there's probably a little bit of me, and, you know, I still have money blocks like anyone else, are feeling a bit shy about that, you know, and feeling like, oh, well, and it's funny at the stage of business I'm at too, is that now, you know, I'm looking for bigger opportunities. And for them, they're like, oh, $1 million, that's no big deal. Like, that's not very exciting. So you have to really pitch your audience, you know, you have to find who is it useful to hear that, you know, because a lot of business podcasts, they're not necessarily pitching at people at that $1 million level. They're pitching at people who are new in business or getting to six figures. And so I'm still trying to figure out who would be best to hear that message. And one of the podcasts, I was like, oh, I'd love to go on Eventual Millionaire now because she only interviews millionaires. And then I'm like, but I'm really, like, I'm a new millionaire. Like, how can I go on that podcast? So it's an interesting place to be.
And it's an evolving story. And one of the posts that I read of yours, which really stood in my mind, which is why I wanted to invite you onto the show, was a post that you wrote on your website, which was how I got 200 media interviews in 1 year. I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about that, because that is going some. That really is.
It is. Gosh, I think it was probably about a year and a half ago, I started looking for more interview opportunities. And I was getting really blocked about it. I didn't know how to write a pitch. Every time I thought about sending it to somebody, I'd go, oh, why would they want me? Like, oh, I'm not big enough. I'm not good enough for them. And I really got blocked around it. And so I actually just enlisted my assistant to do it. And what's really cool about my assistant is that she sees things for me that are just obvious. She's like, of course they'd want you on that podcast. Why wouldn't you? And the good thing is that I think the more you do, the more you can do, because then people are like, oh, well, look, she's everywhere. I want to interview her too. And that's how you kind of get bigger and better. So I probably do about, on an average week, I'll do at least five interviews. So I've got three today. And that comes from a combination of people pitching us. So, you know, coming to us, and my assistant just, you know, schedules them in. But she probably sends a couple of pitch emails. And the only reason actually this month has been a little bit light on interviews is because I had so much work to do, because we're revamping the boot camp, we're doing all this stuff. And I just said, Amber, I need some desk time, you know, because I've got a baby and I only really have about 12 to 15 hours desk time. And so next year I'm really planning to, because I won't have that, you know, revamping the boot camp or anything to do, I even want to ramp that up to kind of 5 to 10 interviews a week. And actually for that to be, you know, because I can't outsource that. You know, I turn up and tell my stories, and I shouldn't be doing the other stuff in my business. You know, I shouldn't be doing the stuff that my assistant can do or that I can outsource, like editing interviews or editing blog videos or doing any of that stuff. So I think the whole reason that all those interviews came about is because I got really clear on my zone of genius.
Right. That was sort of doing interviews and sharing your stories and sharing your tips and advice in as many
different ways. Talking to people. Mm. Absolutely. Because I was like, that's the only thing that I can bring to my business that can only be done by me. And everything else really can be outsourced to someone else. So once I got clear on that, I had a lot more time in my schedule, and it just became a regular thing for us to
pitch. a habit by the sounds of things.
And what doesn't happen by accident, basically.
No, I mean, that's what struck me so much about the article, and I'll link to it in the show notes, but it sounded really, really strategic and really kind of focused. And was that a mixture of traditional media as well as podcast interviews? And what sort of mix did you do in terms of the type of content you did?
It was mostly entrepreneurial podcasts and blog interviews. And that's very strategic as well. I tracked that quite a lot in my early years because I thought, oh, to feel legitimate and to feel credible in my business, I want to go out for traditional media. So I went to some of the women's magazines and got published in them. And also as part of the honeymoon testers, we did about 100 media interviews, including TV and radio and all that kind of stuff. And I kind of got to the point where I realized, one, I don't like doing TV very much.
That's interesting.
Because
you do great videos. That's a real surprise to hear that.
I think because it's so much work. And I get, because again, I've got a baby, I have to be so clear on return on investment. And for me, it's so much easier to do a podcast interview where I know the audience is entrepreneurs, or I know the audience is women who want to do something different in their lives. So for me, that is a great use of my time. For me to get up, because I live in Newcastle in Australia, which is about 3 hours from Sydney, you know, the capital city where all the TV shows are. So to do that, to go down to Sydney and to do hair and makeup and for a 30-second segment where you can't guarantee that entrepreneurs are watching, because they're probably not watching morning TV.
Yeah.
They're listening to podcasts on their way to work, on their commute, or they're listening to podcasts while they're editing their own podcasts. They're not necessarily sitting there watching daytime TV. And I found the same with traditional magazines. And so now it's like, well, what are entrepreneurs reading? Because they're not necessarily reading Cosmo or Clio or all that kind of stuff. And they were great to put on the logo as seen in. But for me, I'm like, God, I've got such limited time. I want to go for the podcast where I know my audience is listening.
That's such a good message for my audience, because when I'm coaching people in PR and how to get press coverage, I often say that to people, you know, it's great to get coverage in the mainstream media, newspapers, magazines, TV, radio, for that kind of credibility raising stuff, to be able to put that on your website.
Yeah.
But when it comes to actually reaching the people you want to reach, say, for example, if you've got a course that you want to sell, then actually podcasts or guest posting on blogs can be a lot more effective. And I'm all for doing the thing that's going to be most effective for you in your business, because it might be great to show your mum that you've been in the Sydney Morning Herald or whatever, but actually, will that get you the results you need in your business? So that sounds like just really, really great advice. And I wanted to ask you about something else, actually. Well, one thing I wanted to mention, actually, about those 200 media interviews is that you must read this post that Denise wrote on this, because she gave some really great advice. Some of the things I've actually used in my own pitching for podcast interviews as well, like linking to your calendar and making sure that you've got a photo there that people can take straight away, just making it as easy as possible for people to say yes to you. And she's got a great strategy on how to do this. Where did you get all those tips? Was that something that just sort of came about through doing so many interviews, or did you get your advice from somewhere?
No, I really should get some PR advice, because I do think it is useful. But it was trial and error for us, because first of all, when someone pitches me, I do get them to fill out a little bit of a form, because I found that I was wasting my time, and I had to get a little bit brutal about it to say, well, I can't do that one because your audience is not my audience. Or, you know, someone would email us and say, oh, I've got 30 people on my list, but they're really, really active. And it was a hard decision, but we had to just kind of say, look, come back when you've got a bit more under your belt. You know, or someone's like, oh, I'm starting a brand new podcast. And what I've noticed for sometimes with beginners, it's not their real business. It's not their final business. It's like their practice business. And I did so many interviews with people that never went anywhere because they were like, oh, I changed my business now, or it didn't record. It's just like, I have to get really brutal here. So I think some of the guidelines came out of just trial and error and painful interviews where I just thought, never doing that again. And one of those was with this kind of, you know, those blog talk radio type, you know, radio interviews. And it was sort of older women, and they were wonderful, but they really kind of were at me all the time to do this interview, and it wasn't my target audience. And I had to do it from a hotel room and call into this show. And it ended up costing me $80 for this call.
Blimey.
And I remember just thinking, no, like, it's okay for you to say no, because not only did that interview not benefit you in any way, it actually cost you money. So I think the pitch and all that kind of stuff is refined over time to try and make sure I'm in front of my target audience, that it's going to be useful for me, that I'm going to reach people who I want to reach. And not every interview is going to do that. But I think just refining that and being very clear on who you can serve. And I put things in my pitch like, here are some things I can talk about, you know, because otherwise we got emails back and forth like, oh, what would Denise like to talk about? Can we get some talk topics? And it's like, well, you know, here are some talk topics that are already there. So yeah, it's been for me total trial and error.
Yeah, but I mean, it's really great advice. And can you, some of the things that you've used in your pitching for media interviews, are they things that can be transferred to pitching for new clients or new work or pitching for speaking gigs? I mean, I'm presuming this stuff is all transferable.
Oh, absolutely. And actually, that's a new step for me. I'm working with somebody at the moment to develop a pitch for speaking gigs. And it is very similar. You know, people are looking for people to interview who have already got a platform as well.
Yeah.
And who know what they're talking about. And so in my pitch for interviews, I say, well, here's my social media stats because we share interviews on my social media. Here are other people that I've been interviewed by. Here are some, you know, wins in my business or whatever. But, and I'll do the same thing with speaking. You know, it'll be like, here's where I've spoken before. You know, actually one thing that would be good that I'm doing for my speaking one is doing, you know, a show reel, like a little clip of videos. And I was thinking, well, I could probably do that for the interviews. Even I'm thinking about it now, you know, to say, oh, here's a little, you know, YouTube clip of some compilation of podcast interviews that I've done. So, you know, I think they can be transferable. People just want to know that you're credible, that you've got an interesting story, that you're going to be professional and turn up and give something of value to their audience.
And I guess it's like the advice I give to people about pitching to the media. It's not about you. It's actually about what value you can provide. You know, if you're pitching yourself for a podcast interview or pitching yourself as a speaker, what value can you provide for the audience? It's not about you. And that's something that's always worked really, really well for me. And I know we're sort of coming up, we've only got a few minutes left. So I just wanted to ask you one thing. Obviously, you're a money mindset mentor. And it's funny that we got on this call today because I was struggling this afternoon. I've spent the afternoon invoicing and chasing up money. And I just don't like money. I'm always heard saying this all the time. I'm just, anything to do with money, I just find it really, really tiresome. But I'm very conscious when I read your stuff and when I read any other money mindset stuff that this is probably not helping me in any way. What would you say to somebody who said, you know, I'm out now, I just don't really like money and I don't like dealing with it? What's going on there?
You know, it's a habit like any other habit. So I would say one thing that you can do that will start to make a difference, every time you catch yourself saying, I don't like money, just, you know, wear a little elastic band on your wrist or something, you know. And I actually did this when we were applying for the honeymoon testers. Anytime I would think, what if we don't win? I would snap myself and say, that's not your concern. Like, shut that shit down. And so same with this, like every time you hear yourself saying, I don't like money or money doesn't like me, just snap yourself. And I'm not saying to then change it to like money loves me, because you might not be there yet. But you could start to say, I'm learning to like money. That could be your next step as a pattern interrupter. And then, you know, it's like, I'm trying to like money. I'm learning every day to have a better relationship with money. And so you don't feel like a fraud. You don't feel like you're saying something that's not true. You're just kind of stopping that pattern in its tracks. The next step I would say is to read my book, which I talk about looking at your patterns from your childhood or
money situation. I have read it. I think I need to reread it by the sound of things, don't I?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because no one is born not liking money. You know, it's learned behavior and it's learned habits. And that comes from your parents, from school teachers, from your friends, from how rich you were relative to other people, how your parents used and spent that money. It is really useful to go back and look at those family patterns, because it can give you really good insights into how you're acting around money and where it's not safe for you to like money. And, you know, I'm not saying it's an easy ride. You really have to come at it from so many different angles, but it is worth it because it makes, imagine how much easier your business would be if you just liked money. You didn't even have to love money. You just had a neutral relationship with money
I just find it a hassle. You know, I love what I do. You know, I absolutely love it. But when it comes to having to actually, you know, ask people, and just as a little aside, Denise and I, we had a little exchange over Twitter a little while ago, because I wrote a piece for The Guardian called Why Women Need to Stop Working for Free, which I'll link to in the show notes, which was about the fact I'm always being asked to speak at events. And then the conversation always goes, you know, I always go back and yeah, that'd be lovely. Yes, I'm free. And then what sort of rate did you have in mind? And then there will be that very awkward conversation, which is, oh, well, actually, we thought you'd do it for the exposure. And I'd be like, well, I've been doing this for 15 years. I don't really think I need the exposure. And so, but I think it is an ongoing area I have to keep working on and keep reminding myself that it needs working on. But anyway, we are coming up to time. So I just wanted to ask you, where can we find you? Where are the best places to find you online? And what have you got coming up that you want to let us know about?
Well, I'm simply at luckybitch.com. Really easy to find. And, you know, I think if someone is struggling with money stuff right now, get on my newsletter, listen to my Money Blocks audio, which is at the top of my website. And that will give you a bit of an understanding of what money blocks are. And then every week you'll get new tips for me about how to use that money mindset in your business to make more money, have more fun, get more clients, all that kind of stuff. So, yep, absolutely love to hear from your community.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for that, Denise. I'm aware you've got to pop off now and do another interview, but thank you so much for that. It's been absolutely delightful. Thank you.
Thank you. Speak to you soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, do head over to the show notes at janetmurray.co.uk/episode23, where you can get my free download, which is full of tips on how you can get more guest posting opportunities. So that's janetmurray.co.uk/episode23.
You've just been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, she'd really appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes. And don't forget to head over to www.janetmurray.co.uk for more free content that will help you get media coverage for your business.